Hello, everybody. It's a very special day as I attempt to put on my Hagrid accent, which isn't very good. Thankfully, everybody in the world who wants to have seen the Harry Potter film will have now seen it. 17 billion tickets sold over a 24-hour period makes it the biggest selling film of all time. Obviously, we're recording this officially on Harry Potter Day, so I've not seen the end of it, so I don't know if the case of one shall live and one shall die is true. But what I do know is that I have two people here with me helping out on this week's All About Symbian Insight podcast. One of them shall leave and one of them shall die. Who would like to be Harry? Rafe.
Yes, I thought that might happen. Hello, everybody. I'm Rafe Blanford, down in Sussex.
Oh, you're not. You're Harry Potter. You'd be Harry Potter. You've got a scar and everything. You're going to defeat Voldemort. But Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hello. I shan't pretend to be any character. I am just myself.
Can you do a Rafe Fiennes impression?
No.
No. Right. Okay. You can just be Steve then. Fair enough then. Yes, it's your All About Symbian Insight podcast. I'm Ewan Spence, and Rafe and Steve and I are going to spend the next half hour or so going over some of the important stories in the Symbian world over the last week. Of course, you can leave your comments back on the website, www.allaboutsymbian.com, or on iTunes as well, up to 5-star review. A bundle of things coming up here. We've got music, we've got audio, we've got video, we've got updates. But let's start with hardware, given that I've been away for a week or two and everybody's been promising that we do this. And it's the Nokia X7. Now, before I go into the review, Rafe, I want to come to you and ask you a question first. Where did Nokia position this phone?
Well,
I'm going to come on to this in a second, but it's a phone that seems to like try to get into every camp and feels to get into any.
I think Nokia were positioning this as a design-led Symbian 3 device, and they were distinguishing it from the other Symbian 3 devices. But I think the clue is they were perhaps forgetting that there are other competing smartphones out there that probably do what the X7 does a little better, and it maybe loses some of the things that the Symbian 3 phones are best known for. But it's very easy to say that as a power user. I'm sure there are people out there who look at the X7 and purely go, ooh, that's a nice-looking phone. Yes, I'd like to own that. But as we perhaps hinted at on earlier podcasts, I think we have a little bit of scepticism about the X7. Having had a bit more time to explore it, I would imagine you may have sort of confirmed that.
Yeah, if you look at the X7 just on its own, I mean, if you were to walk down and go, here's a smartphone, somebody hands this to you, and you just start using it, it is a wonderfully, wonderfully well-specced phone in terms of what it does. It does email, it does your web, it does everything that I expect it to do. It doesn't do it all perfectly. There are still some niggles and foibles that I have, especially around the music player. And listeners out there will know the music player is where I tend to go to first, just as Steve, you head straight for the camera, and Rafe heads straight for the email integration. But on its own, it's pretty good. You know, it does what you expect it to do. It's competent. But it's when you kind of suddenly bring the rest of the smartphone world into focus. And even if you just bring in Nokia's smartphones into focus, the X7 pricing, there's not a lot of difference between the pricing that you have in the X7 and then other devices like the N8, which are obviously slightly coming down in price. The whole, it just feels like there's this tiny narrow window, and Nokia decided we're going to fill it. Now, other handset manufacturers who maybe only have two or three handset variants, Apple would be the obvious one here. They have a phone and it has 16 gig, 32 gig, 64 gig storage. That's it. You know, there's the phone and you just decide what price you're going to play in the sliding scale. Nokia seemingly just try and put something at every £25 price point. And so the X7 is, you know, you pay a little bit more, you get a huge jump up in features. You pay a little bit less, and I'd argue that something like the C6, you pick up a whole load of features. The X7 is like if the Laffer curve suddenly had a dipping point. It's just in this horrible no man's land for me in terms of the ecosystem in the Nokia world. Would that be fair, Steve? I mean, is that where it kind of sits for you?
Yeah, I was intrigued by your comments. I know this is one of my pet peeves in terms of loud speaker quality, so I apologize for boring people. But the C601, which you've had for yonks now, one of Nokia's smallest Symbian 3 device, probably still is the cheapest Symbian 3 device, has a better speaker and better multimedia credentials in many ways than the X7, which is almost twice its price. And I see where Rafe's coming from in terms of this being a style-led phone, but I just think it's been horribly over-optimistic of Nokia to think they're going to sell a load at the price point, at that particular style point, because the people looking to pay £400 for a phone or the equivalent on a monthly contract, they're probably up and looking at iPhone 4s. When, and I'm sorry, yes, the X7 has got some nice slanted steel sides, but I'm sorry, if you're in that price point, the iPhone 4 probably does look better to most people, so I just don't think they're going to sell many. They've got to do something drastic in terms of repositioning it.
Rafe, I mean, is that how Rafe sees it, to go into American radio speak?
Well, I'm perhaps not quite so down on it, but I mean, reading around the reaction on the web and some of the comments we've had in from the podcast, it does seem that the X7 hasn't quite hit the mark. And the only thing I can say is it's, you know, necessary sometimes to step back purely from the power user viewpoint. But I can't really escape the conclusion that, you know, in order to be successful, the X7 really needed to come out soon. I mean, I think it might be a different story if it had come out at the same time as, say, the rest of the Symbian 3 devices. But it does, to an extent at least, feel like a sort of almost an afterthought to the Symbian 3 portfolio. And that's a bit unfair because it does have some pretty unique characteristics. But on the whole, you know, I started off being, you know, when I first saw it, I can't say I particularly like the design. When I first got my hands on it, yes, I thought it was very nice, and I still do as a piece of hardware. But then it's a question of, you put it against some of the other Symbian 3 devices, and it's, you know, it's hard to like it in comparison to some of those. And so I've sort of, you know, more and more come round to the sort of thinking that you and Steve have had.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit like Cedric Diggory. It's nice to look at. He plays a very important role for a very small part in the fourth Harry Potter film. And then it disappears and goes off and does its own thing, and nobody ever talks about Twilight ever again.
This is interesting because every phone, in order to sell, has got to have a unique selling point. In the iPhone's case, it's made by Apple. It's an iPhone. Okay. In this Symbian world, we've got the they've got to have reasons people would buy those phones over perhaps what else is out there in the competitive world on the high street shelves. Now, the N8 has got this fabulous camera. Okay, we buy it because you want a great camera with Xenon flash. The C7 is really stylish. It's not that expensive, and it does an awful lot, and it's got a removable battery. So, you know, we can all see a way of liking the C7. The C601 is pretty tiny and does an amazing amount for such a tiny, tiny phone. The X7 is, well, it's got those four plastic speaker grills. And
yeah, which don't have any speakers behind them.
Yep, and that's about it. Where's its unique selling point? And it's certainly against the Galaxy S2 and the LG Optimus 2X and all these other top-end phones, not counting the iPhone. I mean, the Nokia X7 is basically up in the same price bracket and just doesn't deliver.
Yeah, it comes back to what I said right at the beginning. Yes, I think it's meant to stand out from a style and design point of view. And actually, I do think the kind of design that they've utilised, you know, is fairly unique in terms of the curved back shell. And, you know, it's a good example of, you know, extreme design, if you will, with everything kind of fitted into the devices. That's the sort of terminology that Nokia applied to it. But there are an awful lot of devices that also go for that kind of same kind of thing, where they're, you know, looking to be really thin, really stylish.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the X7 doesn't sort of measure up quite so much there, because I think it's a combination of, if it was like that and maybe having some of the other stuff on, it would do fine. But then when you couple that with Symbian, the sort of users that are going for the Symbian devices at the moment perhaps are less concerned by that. Maybe that's unfair. I mean, if you like the X7 and have got one, you know, come back to us and say why you like it, what you think its unique selling point is, because we'd be interested to hear other people's opinions.
It reminds me very, very much of the situation that Palm had with the Palm 5X and the Palm 5, which essentially had the Palm 3, which everybody was buying. And if we consider that as the N8. Now, what Palm did was they said, oh, here comes the Palm 5. It's stylish, it's silver, it's sleek, it's very thin, it's a fixed battery. It looks absolutely wonderful. It does exactly the same as the Palm 3. The thing here is the X7 has a mono speaker, or at least it's as good as mono. Go back and have a look at the reviews and all about Symbian to find out why. It is slightly thinner. It is stylish. It looks nice. But and yes, it does have Symbian Nano on it. But once that rolls out onto the N8s and everything else, I do not see a unique selling point apart from it's got a curve at the back. That's fine if it's a Lamborghini, but it's not. It's a Nissan. And you don't want, I'm sorry, this is just not good enough.
My wife and I were driving past a garage. This is about 4 or 5 years ago, and I think it may have been at some Japanese franchise. And the slogan on the side was, blah, 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 it's a curvy car. And that was the best thing they could do to sell it, was that it was curvy. And it's a bit like saying the X7. The Nokia X7, buy it because it's got a slanted steel back. And I'm sorry, that's not good enough. I was in high street shops. I was doing a bit of a survey last week. I thought, I wonder which Nokia Symbian 3 phones are still being sold in the shop. We hear from some rabble rousers around the world that there's a seller boycott of the Symbian 3 devices, which I don't really believe. But yes, on the shelves, there were Nokia N8s. Advertising the camera, again, unique selling point. There were E7s, again, with the keyboard opened up, showing, wow, it's one of the few large touchscreen phones with a really good QWERTY keyboard as well. Unique selling points. There was no sign of the X7 whatsoever. It just did not exist on the shelves. And I found that very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I actually don't think this X7 actually exists. It actually reminds me of one of those card games where you have to find the Black Queen, because it's been going around everybody at the All About Symbian offices distributed around the country. And it's like a case of, well, please, who wants it next? Who really? Anybody? Anybody? Steve, you have it. No, don't worry. I've taken pictures. You have it. I want to go back to these. David, you have it. If we don't want to, if nobody in the All About Symbian office wants to keep a hold of this one, or to go out and buy one, or to go for an extended long life review on it,
yeah.
Hashtag fail.
It tells you a certain amount. Just to point out, actually, it's being carried by the UK operator 3, but as far as I'm aware, that's the only operator that's chosen to arrange it so far, and I think that pattern is probably repeated elsewhere. It's just being picked up by a single operator in a country, and obviously that will vary depending on where you are. And I have a sneaking suspicion this product might do better out in the Far East than it does in Europe. I mean, we've talked quite a bit about how Nokia's Symbian sales have been falling in Europe, and I think that's continuing, and the X7 certainly isn't going to do anything to help that particular trend. And you know, this is of course partly tied up in how people regard Symbian and of course a switch to Windows Phone, but I think this might be happening to the device regardless of the surrounding context.
I have found a unique selling point.
You have, go on then.
I've just realized something. This is probably the only phone in existence that I could skim 5 jumps on a pool.
Yes, and I suspect the phone might not survive the final plunge into the depths still.
Oh, look, there's a success point at the end of it as well. Yay! X7. There's always a sort of poor child that somebody out there will love. If it's you, get in touch. We'll give you a spare.
So I suspect that's going to draw the line under the All About Symbian X7 coverage. And we'll all be staying on our various devices. I know you and you're still very much using the C601 and the N8, and Steve, you're on a sort of N8-E7 combination most of the time, aren't you?
I am. The E7 probably is the device which will see me using it most over the next 6 months, but not until it's got Anna and not until they fix some of the Wi-Fi bugs, because I'm sorry, the E7 is almost unusable for my personal needs at the moment. But I am eyeing it up on the corner of my desk, and once Anna hits, I'll be back on that for a good few months. We'll see how we go.
And I'm personally on a C7 sort of E6 combination. So actually we managed to cover pretty much all the Symbian 3 devices between us, which just goes to show having a range and a choice is probably a rather good thing. But I should hand back to you and to get on with the rest of this podcast.
Indeed. And I'm just going to do a seamless linking. Seeing as we're talking about Anna and updates and ease of use, one of the biggest complaints about Anna is it's one of the forgotten tracks of Please Please Me by the Beatles, but it's also where the new web browser debuts for Symbian, and we've been giving it a good try out here. It's forced me to use the X7 a bit more, but Rafe, you've also been looking more behind the scenes in the engine of the web browser, because it's not just in Anna that the web browser engine is appearing, is it?
That's right. I mean, this version 7.3 is kind of an update to 7.2, which is the version that's found in most Symbian 1, that's a 65th edition, and Symbian 3 devices up until this point in time. But 7.3, yes, it was formally announced as part of Anna, and I think it's known in shorthand as kind of the Symbian Anna browser. But thanks to the firmware updates we talked about in previous weeks, it's actually coming to most 65th edition devices, I think everything with the exception of the N97, which we talked about.
And it's also listen quietly. You can already hear the comments of anger being written, can't you?
You can, and yes, if you're an N97 owner, please don't take it out on us. It's also on a few S63rd edition feature pack 2 devices. I think it's the E72, the E5 and a couple of others. And so what this does, it actually brings in a new WebKit engine, and that you can look up the numbers on the Nokia support site. I can't remember them off the top of my head. And yes, there's a new UI, and actually I think the new UI is in one sense the biggest improvement to the browser, because it makes it more intuitive to use. It's less clunky when you're moving around pages, for example, and it's easier to enter new addresses. But I thought I'd take a look at some of the raw numbers in terms of page loading time, comparing Web 7.2, and that was tested on the C7, with Web 7.3 on the X7. You can go and have a look at the article for the full numbers, but kind of the headline result is that the new version of the web browser, 7.3, is on average loading pages about 25 to 30% faster than the previous version. And this is actually, in terms of speed, getting comparable to what Opera Mobile is doing on the C7, and there isn't really any difference between Opera Mobile on the C7 X7, maybe a slight difference of a few percent, but that's well within the kind of the margins of error for this kind of testing. So, you know, this kind of underlines that there really is a real performance difference going into the Symbian and a browser. And for me, that will make a big difference to sort of day-to-day use. We've had a couple of comments already on the story. It was written and published this morning, saying, what about comparing it to other devices? Well, it's always a bit fraught with difficulty doing these direct comparisons with other devices. But I have run a few informal tests just with an iPad here, a Windows 7 device, an Android device, and they were all marginally quicker than Web 7.3, but the difference was much smaller than I was actually expecting, which actually is suggesting to me, at least in day-to-day use, and this kind of methodology I used on the testing was designed to be more in the typical day-to-day usage rather than getting the optimum possible speeds, that you know, in day-to-day, it's going to get to the point now where, yes, there is a speed improvement with increased processor speed and resource, things like that, but that's not really the biggest factor. The biggest factor is, you know, your speed of connection, be that 2G, 3G or Wi-Fi. Obviously over Wi-Fi you're probably going to see some speed differences, but over 3G it's going to get much less, and in that sense it's the connection speed more than anything else that tends to be limiting the mobile web. That's not completely true, but certainly I would say that's the biggest bottleneck, if you like. But go and have a look at the results and you'll see that this Symbian Anna browser does provide a significant performance improvement that you can actually measure in real terms over what's gone before. And that's you know, a great thing, especially as it's coming to a whole bunch of devices apart from the modern Symbian 3 ones.
Rafe, let me come back to you with a couple more questions, because you've done all that in-depth testing, and maybe Steve can jump in with some thoughts on the other devices in a second. You know, Nokia's always been, you know, a company that doesn't really pay attention to things like CPU numbers and everything. Yet we compare the web browsers with these huge numbers of statistics. If we put all the numbers aside and just go on emotional feel, who in your mind wins out of those browsers on like Android, iOS, Windows 7, and Symbian Anna? If all you could have is one browser from one of those mobile devices and nothing else, which one would you instinctively grab for if they were all unlabeled?
Well, that's a tricky question. I mean,
because really that's what it comes down to on the high street. You know, people don't go in with micrometers in the store. They just go, you know, which is sexy, which is nice, which makes me feel like Edward II Wong Fu Hippolo III in Cowboy Bebop Japanese anime moving the screen
front. I can answer that, Ian, before Rafe jumps in. Just I've been testing here the HTC Sensation, which has got some horrible, horrible hardware features, and I don't generally give it a really big thumbs up on my phone show, but...
This is the Windows 7 device, yep.
Yeah, no. This is the HTC Sensation is Android 2.3.3,
right. Okay.
And it's their latest and greatest Android phone, but it's got a stonkingly good browser made better by the fact it's got a QHD screen. So you combine a 540 by 960 pixel screen with the very latest Android under the hood browser performance and flash on board as well, and some incredibly intelligent reflowing of text. Wherever you zoom around, it always presents just the bits you need. Emotionally, I would say that's by far the best browsing experience on a mobile device. And I know it's on Android, but that's my answer.
Yeah, well, I would add into that, I mean, Steve actually hinted at one of my thoughts here when he talked about screen size, and I actually think the screen size probably has a much bigger impact than any particular software or the way the browser's been implemented past a certain point. And so, you know, as I was doing some testing on the iPad this morning, I thought, yes, this is a much better browsing experience. But a lot of that was down to just having a bigger screen. If I was thinking about in terms of software, I think it's actually hard to beat the Opera mobile browsing experience. I really think they've refined that UI and the UX really nicely on that browser, and it's also pretty quick. The fact that you can then use it across multiple devices, and there's the Opera mobile option, if you like, when you're in a low bandwidth situation. So if I had to choose just one, I'd probably go for Opera Mobile. I mean, the sad thing about that is it doesn't always integrate as well as the native browsers, and so if you're doing things like email, etc., etc., it doesn't always tie in. The good news is, on the Symbian at least, there is a default browser setting that works with email and a few other things, but not universally. I mean, that's less true on the other platforms, although there are various workarounds on Android that you can apply and try, and it does depend on which Android device and version we're talking about. But I would agree with Steve, you know, having tried some of the recent Android devices, and in my case, I think it was the Galaxy S2, I was pretty impressed by that. There isn't as much difference as there used to be, and certainly with the Symbian and a browser, Symbian gets a lot closer to kind of iOS and Android. I still don't think it's quite as good, and part of that's about speed, and part of that's about the interface itself. And so if you're just looking for a browsing device, I'm not sure Symbian will provide you with the best experience, aside from the fact you'll probably get longer battery life and be able to do it for longer than some of the other devices. So, you know, it kind of spins in roundabouts, as always. But browsing, you know, it's obviously one of those vital functions of a smartphone, so it's always an area of interest. And there is a high degree of subjectivity to this. I mean, for example, if you stick to just mobile sites, actually the standard Nokia browser is very quick off the mark in terms of the initial loading process, and will sometimes be faster than some of its competitors, including Opera and Android. And I'm talking for pages that are, you know, maybe 50 kilobytes in size that are coming down in less than a second. And also because it's, you know, they're generally designed to fit on a page on a mobile phone, it works very well and things scroll around smoothly. If you start expanding that out onto the kind of the wider web, yes, I think particularly on big pages, the Nokia browser can still be pretty slow for moving around the page, and it's worse on 7.2, it's better on 7.3, but it's not as good as I'd like it to be. And maybe that's a result of the kind of the resources, the process and RAM, etc. It's very difficult to make a judgment because it does depend on what kind of web technology and what elements we're talking about. You know, things like HTML5 support aren't as good on Symbian as they are on the most recent devices, and what we'll get in Windows Phone Mango as well. But then there is Qt WebKit coming along for Symbian in the next software release, so things will probably change again. So there is a high degree of personal subjectivity based on what sort of browsing you do, where you do it, and what your personal preferences are in terms of software.
So there you go. If you want to leave your comments on that, and given that it's one of those personal subjects, we suspect you could get highly heated, do feel free to leave those comments. www.allaboutsymbian.com. If you listen to the podcast in the recent past, will be on the front page. If not, just click media on the top menu bar and scroll back. This is insight number 175. Right then, Steve, bundles of updates. Everybody says Nokia leaves everybody behind, but hardware stays steady, but the software has been updated both from Nokia and from independent sources as well on some of the other older devices. Let's start with the Nokia store. Oh, hold on, Rafe, can I just check, is it still Ovi store, or do we have to switch to Nokia store now?
It's still Ovi store at the moment. The back end is switched to Nokia Publish, so I can't imagine it's too long before we'll be talking about Nokia store, but this week, yes, Ovi store still.
Right then. Okay, Steve, there's been an update to Ovi store, hasn't there?
I think we mentioned this to a certain extent last week on the podcast, and for the older devices, certainly the S63rd edition and 5th edition devices have got a new version of the Ovi store with much snappier performance. But breaking news a couple of days before you'll be hearing this podcast, the Symbian 3 phones have now also got an Ovi store client update. We're now up to version 2.12.033, so up from 2.08. Performance improvements across the board, item and index pages loading more quickly than earlier releases. No major visual changes, it's purely a performance thing, and I suspect Nokia are changing things behind the scenes as well. So kudos from Nokia for you know, updating across the board and keeping things current and pushing forward. You just kind of wish all this has happened a year or so ago, really, is to still be finding ways they can dramatically improve performance a year or two after release is kind of sad.
Agreed, Steve. Yes, there's still improvements coming to Ovi store, and I suspect there's more on the roadmap, but it does feel like some of these could have arrived a little bit earlier. Still, they're here and they're available over the air.
Speaking of getting updates, the i8-910 owners out there have been using custom firmwares for some time. We should stress this is all done at their own risk and outside of warranty. But Steve, I thought we'd seen the last of the custom firmwares for this little device. It turns out that we've got something else in the wings.
Well, people, before I go into that, people have been asking in the comments, and it's a very good point, a good question. How come we're covering the Samsung i8-910 firmware modding scene when we don't even mention the underground, slightly less than legal modding scene on Nokia devices? And it's for one reason only. All right, two reasons only. One is that
a ruthless devotion to Nokia.
Yeah. No. First of all, Samsung basically abandoned i8-910 owners with a completely unusable final firmware. As they fixed the final few bugs, they got the available C disk, i.e. the system disk memory, down to 17 megabytes on a freshly booted device, freshly hard reset, which is just no good at all. You install a couple of system apps and you basically got an unusable smartphone. So something had to be done. And I was just happy to see, first of all, HyperX, a guy in Germany, a leap into action with a bunch of firmwares that dramatically improved the performance and the free disk space and added some extras in as well. And lately, this new guy, Final, F-A-E-N-I-L, I presume that's how you pronounce it, coming on board with his own series of firmwares he's been developing in parallel. Again, keeping the flag flying for the i8-910, which, let's face it, is still a pretty desirable hunk of silicon. I mean, it's got a great screen, 3.7 inch, it's got great loudspeakers, still got a pretty decent camera, does record in 720p capture. It's basically a really good phone still, and I'm very glad that there are people out there still modifying firmwares and keeping the flag flying. And the second reason, of course, why we're covering this is that Samsung actually gave the i8-910 a completely open bootload, i.e. you just hold a couple of buttons down as you power on, and hey presto, you have got, which ROM would you like me to load? What would you like me to boot up into now? Which is just a really nice feature. It makes it an absolute doddle, provided you've got an older Windows XP device around to do the firmware loading. On the phone side, it's just really, really easy. Whereas I understand in the Nokia case, you probably have to, you know, root it and apply all sorts of unmentionable patches before you can start altering the firmware. So those are the main two reasons. I'm very glad to see this happening. Do see the story on the site entitled "The i8-910 Gets a New Lease of Life" from Finals Pit, and Finals Pit is the name of his name of his site. I'm not just making that up. So yeah, a new browser agents, camera tweaks, Kinetic UI tweaks. There are compatibility certificates with a lot of the Nokia software. Shh, maybe I shouldn't mention that. Cute runtimes and much more. So do go try it out. I would warn people, though, that if you thought HyperX's firmwares were a bit geeky to install, these final firmwares have some more fundamental changes, tweaks, and pre-installed decisions. There's an awful lot to decide and play around with. Set aside a good hour or two and a couple of stiff drinks.
We've looked back at old devices, brought them up to date. New devices. We'll be getting updates in the future, and this is called Belle, B-E-L-L-E, the feminine, not Belle as in Martin Bell, who wore the white suit, not Alec Guinness either. Let's get as many 50s references in as possible this week. But the Belle UI, we've had our first kind of peek at it, haven't we, Rafe? And it's the design document for the UIs that will be on the phones. So it's how accurate is it going to be?
Yes, that's right, Ewan. We're talking about Symbian Belle here, although I should point out that this hasn't been officially announced by Nokia yet. All that they've said is that there's another Symbian software update on the way, and I think they've said there'll be a new home screen with flexible widgets, a reduced size status bar, and kind of a move away from the soft key menus. They haven't talked about the name. Belle, I think, has been widely leaked, so I think we can assume that's the name now. And they haven't talked about timing at all, and so it's not really worth speculating on that. Although I think if you looked at the forthcoming Nokia World in October, that would probably be as good a guess as any. I won't go through all the various tweaks here. There's quite a few, but I think there's a couple of big ones that are worth talking about. The first of which is the status bar is being slimmed down. This is the bit that sits on top of all current Symbian applications. You know, it has the title bar, sort of timing, some indicators for battery and signal, and it's sort of, I think, about 120 pixels or so. That's being reduced down to about 40 pixels or so, and it's just having the icons, the status icons, in a row along the top. It's reminiscent, actually, of the status bar on Android. In fact, this whole Belle UI certainly is reminiscent of Android in many ways, although it sort of brings in a lot of the elements we're familiar with from earlier Series 6 or Symbian 3 UI as well. The other big change, which I think is probably the most important one, is, I mentioned this earlier, the move away from kind of the soft key driven menus, or at least a de-emphasizing of them. What we're going to have instead of that kind of options and close button at the bottom of every screen is a toolbar, and that can have up to four elements on it, one of which will be a back button, and that'll be on the far left hand side. That's going to kind of be universal, and that's going to introduce a much stronger idea of backstepping through applications. So that's the idea: you open up an application, and rather than exiting it, you press the back button on the toolbar, and that takes you back to where you were before, and so on until you get back to the home screen. That's a concept that I think UIQ users will be very familiar with. That was really the first, I think, of the UIs to really introduce that idea in a very strong way. It's since been taken up by others. It's used really by Android to a certain extent, iOS as well, and very strongly as well in Windows Phone, which has its dedicated back button as well. So we're going to see that on Symbian Belle as well. There will still be kind of a pop-up options menu. That will be sort of one of the options that you'll see on this new look toolbar. There's also going to be sort of a change to some of the things like the tab bar. So these are things that you get in contacts for switching between the contactless groups and IM. But rather than having the tabs that are difficult to hit with your finger, you're going to get these stretching right across the screen as kind of a change to what are referred to as parallel views. And so switching between two different views in the application that are considered at the same level. And that's important because if you're backstepping, as I mentioned earlier, those views are considered the same. And so you won't go back from one to the other. You'll go back up to the next hierarchy level, because at the moment Symbian is really based around views that are hierarchical to each other. So you go into one, then you drop down to the next level, and so on. With this, you're going to get a flatter structure, you're going to get more parallel views, you're also going to get something that's referred to as a flip view, so that when you say touch a photo in the Photos application, it will flip over and show you the metadata. But those will also be considered parallel views as far as backstepping is concerned. And so what you're going to have is this much flatter structure that's actually, I think, a lot more in line with the kind of contemporary design you get on iOS and Android as well. Windows Phone actually does something slightly different, but I think the kind of the design pattern, if you like, is really, it's not that much different to what we've got on Symbian at the moment. This is really described as evolutionary rather than revolutionary. I do think that's fair, but it does feel like it will be a lot more modern. You can see a lot more of the kind of things that will be coming in. There are some other elements. For example, you'll be able to rotate through three axes, not just two at the moment. There's going to be improved dialogue, some extra UI elements. There's some extra gesture support. For example, there'll be a rotate gesture, which I think will be useful in photos and maps. There's also going to be more extensive use of haptic feedback. But I would encourage people to go and have a look at these design guidelines, which give you a good idea of what the Belle UI will look like. And I think it's going to be a pretty substantial update to Symbian. Indeed, I'd go so far as to say, at least in visual terms, this will be the biggest update we've really seen to Series 60, S60, Symbian 3 as it sort of evolved through the years. I suppose it's comparable to the addition of touch when we moved from S63rd edition to S65th edition. But in terms of the look, it's actually going to look quite a bit different. As I say, the actual ways things work, the design patterns, aren't all that dissimilar. It's more of a tweaking evolution than anything else. But I think this will actually make the devices feel a lot more modern and will give that critical kind of new look and feel, which for the remaining Symbian devices will, I think, be very important towards driving their sales as we move into sort of 2012 especially. There are some more Symbian devices, as we know, to come, and I imagine the majority of those will actually ship with this new Belle UI out of the box. It should also be available to existing Symbian 3 devices as well. We'll no doubt learn a lot more about Belle when it's officially announced, and I'm sure we've only scratched the surface here. There's a lot more to it, and quite frankly, I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, there's this kind of rubbing salt into the wound, though, isn't it, Rafe, having these articles and this information coming out while most of us are still waiting for Anna?
Yes, it's fairly typical of Nokia in some ways to do this, and I can understand people getting irritated with the fact they still haven't got Symbian Anna. On the other hand, the reason that this information has been released is really so developers can make sure their applications fit in with the new look and feel, and obviously it's logical to do that when the cute quick components have come out at the same time. So we'll actually see probably a preview of some of this as the first applications using these get released into Ovi Store, and people will be able to run those obviously on their current devices. But yes, I do understand the level of frustration, but I'd only point out the fact that you're hearing about this is because All About Symbian has gone into the details able to kind of examine it and explain what this actually means for the next version. So sort of patience is required here. And yes, there is still an enormous amount of frustration, obviously. Working on delivering updates in a timely manner is something we've talked about before with regards to Nokia, and that's something they still need to work on, really.
Yeah, you did mention there, Rafe, that existing devices, either C601, N8, E7, etc., are going to get Symbian Belt. Is that something you know for sure, or just something you suspect? Because obviously I suspect there will be higher RAM requirements, and even with the greater amount of RAM in these Symbian 3 phones compared to the old S60 fifth edition generation, I suspect some of them still might be running a bit tight on RAM.
Well, we'll have to wait and see on that, obviously, for an official Nokia announcement. But given that Nokia have indicated that these devices, the existing devices, would be receiving further software updates, I think it's a pretty good bet that Symbian Belle will be available on the Symbian 3 devices. There's pretty much no chance that this will come to a 65th edition or any of the earlier devices. Yeah. But the E6 might be an exception because of its slightly different resolution. But even so, I mean, I can only speculate at this point because there is no official announcement. I would stress it's all non-official. It hasn't been formally announced yet. So we're kind of giving you a preview, but, you know, it's something that's obviously interesting to talk about. But if I had to put money on it, I would be pretty much 99% confident that this will be available on the older devices. And I'm probably going to end up embarrassed and proved wrong, but we'll just have to wait and see on that.
So there we go. There, all fun and games. Rafe, a cynic would say that Nokia is evolving the Symbian UI so it makes a very easy transition to the Windows Phone UI.
A cynic might say that, but I think if you look at the design patterns that are out there for Symbian 4, which was kind of the UI that was abandoned after, let's say, a botched engineering effort in terms of the technical implementation, you'll see a very similar design, you know, the familiar toolbars along the bottom, a smaller status bar. That were all things we were expecting to see from Symbian 4. And of course, all of that design predates the Windows Phone announcement by some time. And indeed, sort of the design period for that would predate Stephen Elop arriving on the scene, or even the sort of thought of partnering with Microsoft. So I think that's, you know, it might be a happy happenstance rather than conspiracy theory central. And I'm sure the other conspiracy theory that will be doing the rounds is will be people saying if Symbian is going to get this great updated UI, and obviously how great remains to be seen, why have Nokia switched to Windows Phone at all? And, you know, this also ties in, of course, with MeeGo, because there's a lot of commonality, I think, between this Bell UI and what we're seeing on Heart Mountain, for example. And the answer to that really remains the same, that the decision to move to Windows Phone, while there was some technical motivation in terms of, you know, how quickly it was possible to port devices onto it, and Symbian as a particular culprit there in terms of being able to get new device hardware families up and running on it quickly, I think a lot of this is actually still about the surrounding ecosystem. Now, whether you buy that argument or not, that's, you know, the argument that Stephen Elop has clearly made. You know, it's not just about apps. That is, of course, a large element of it. It's also about all the accompanying services, the connections out to the wider kind of device family in the home, you know, be that TVs, gaming consoles, and whatever else may be to come. And of course, you know, services in terms of third parties putting their stuff onto the devices as well. And that's kind of the reason switch for Windows Phone. And this UI, I mean, people will say if it had been delivered more quickly, would it have made a difference? And yes, quite possibly. But there has been a sort of ecosystem momentum shift. And so it's easy to sort of entertain oneself with these conspiracy theories, but kind of the decision has been made on that. And while it's fun to speculate about whether things could have been different, a large part of me goes, actually, let's look at what's coming. And I think people should, you know, just bear in mind that actually this is going to apply to an awful lot of Symbian devices. The Symbian 3 devices are already out there, and the 150 million or so that Nokia said they're going to continue to sell going into sort of 2012, 2013, and, you know, even 2014. And so, you know, Bell and this UI is going to, you know, be quite widespread. Certainly it's going to be, you know, more successful than some of the other smartphone OSs that are out there, you know, compared to something like WebOS. You know, Bell's probably going to get into a lot more hands than that particular UI and operating system. And the irony, of course, for anyone that used WebOS is that's actually a pretty technically elegant and rather nicely done UX. Some of the things that are letting it down, perhaps around performance, and of course the ecosystem question as well applies just as much there. And you could say the same thing about BlackBerry in a way as well. So I think that's a debate that will run and run, though. So again, please do comment in the podcast comments.
So there we go. Our time is running out. We actually had a lot more we could have went into. So guys, 10 seconds and I have the kazoo ready. What's your favourite story this week that we're not going to have time to mention in the podcast? Steve?
Nokia LiveView. If you think of all the wonderful data in Nokia Maps and all the places of interest and things in its database, how can you make those more accessible? Nokia LiveView does this. It's in beta. There are a few incompatibilities with Nokia Maps beta 3.8, so do watch out for that. But otherwise, see Nokia LiveView on the site. No!
Yay! My one would be Spotify finally makes it for the US. It's $5 a month for your registration. There are free vouchers kicking around out there. But for $10 a month, you'll get the mobile version as well. Streaming jukebox out of the sky. And Rafe, 10 seconds for you. What's not been mentioned but we should have?
I was going to do LiveView, but I'll just mention Facebook for every phone, which apart from being a really irritating title, manages to use a video in which it uses two Symbian smartphones as examples of every phones, which struck me as a rather an interesting perception of the way Symbian phones are seen. But nonetheless, congratulations to Snap2, who got bought by Facebook and have now got this out and about. And yeah, you know, it's great to see it going everywhere.
Yeah, though, there we go. All those stories can be read in full and commented back on the website, allaboutsymbian.com. All that remains for me now to go out and watch Harry Potter in the only 2D screening that I can find in Scotland. Go me. Say thank you to Rafe Blanford.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you to Steve Litchfield.
Thank you and goodbye. And I should just mention to plug for the last wrap-up part of our Nokia E6 review on the site, allaboutsymbian.com. Do see that for my final verdict on the Nokia E6. And also, if you want a video version, there's my phone show 144, which is coming up later in the week. So do look out for that as well.
And what's goodbye. The URL for that, Steve?
SteveLitchfield.com, as it sounds. Don't forget the T in Litchfield.
And while we're talking about plugs, you can go and look at Ewan's blog at ewanspence.com/blog, where you'll find all his other podcasts. He'll be doing Fringe stuff with August coming up, but there's also the weekly rock show. So indeed, check that out as well.
Indeed. I'm off, and to be very honest, one final secret. Can I give it away now, Rafe, as we close off the show?
Well, I can always edit it out, can't I?
Yes, you can. So just say yes or just say no, then say yes.
Yes. No.
The X7 is OPK's final Horcrux.
Exclusively.
No, that's Camille Saint-Saëns. You go fade that out.
Okay, thanks everybody. Don't forget to check back into the All About Symbian Insight podcast next week.